Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Miss Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Living by Design, everyone. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are so happy that you're able to join us this evening and spend your evening with us for the next 60 minutes. We have a very, very exciting show topic for you this evening, and we are hoping that you will enjoy it as much as we are going to enjoy it. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Lamont?
Doing good. Doing good. Looking forward to tonight's topic and tonight's conversation.
That's great. I am too. Well, let's just jump right in because actually we have a great lineup of topics to cover this evening, and I want to go through just a few things before we get into our discussion. Last week, Tony, as you know, and our listeners as well, we had a fabulous guest. And he has a tremendous amount of knowledge on women and relationships. And we had an overwhelming demand for the topic and a successful turnout and a lot of great feedback for that show. So because of that, we decided to do something a little different here on the Living by Design show because our goal is to help enhance and advance the lives of as many people as we can. And, of course, you know, we're especially interested in our lady listeners. So Mark has offered to give his time to join us for a special feature that we're entitling the Women's Relationship Wednesdays, okay? Women's Relationship Wednesdays. So we want you to be sure and mark your calendars for the fourth Wednesday of each month coming up because we will be featuring Mark on our show each fourth Wednesday. And the purpose of this is to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to interact with Mark and just to draw from his excellent experience and information because, like I stated, if you missed the show last week, you really missed a treat. So I encourage you to go back and listen to the archives, or you can visit Mark's website and sign up for his newsletter. His website is www.markdulaney, and I'll spell that, M-A-R-K. DulaneyDulaney.com. And he has a free newsletter that is awesome. So I encourage you to do that to prepare and be ready for our upcoming features with Mark. And you know, Valentine's Day is right around the corner, and everybody hates to see that day come without that special someone in their life, right, Tony?
Yeah, I guess so.
You guess so? Tony.
Yeah.
You not ready for Valentine's Day?
Well, you know, Valentine's Day is a day that was designed for women and men.
What?
Yeah, Valentine's Day is a woman's day in reference to it's a way for men to treat that woman very special. So, you know, very seldom do you see men jumping up and down, and that before, you know, Valentine's Day, it's always the woman who's getting the presents and the flowers and things like that, or the exchange, but it's primarily for women. And so, yeah.
Okay, well then I guess my question for you is, do you have a special someone, and are you doing something special for her?
I do have someone.
Well, you know what, never mind. She may be listening, so we wouldn't want to ruin your surprise, so that's okay, never mind. You don't have to answer that. I don't want to mess anything up for you.
Yeah, that would make it difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it probably would. So we will allow you to plead the fifth on that. Okay, so before we get into our topic this evening, I just want to give you a quick preview of some great upcoming shows. Next week we're going to be talking to Miss Irene Martina, and she's going to be talking to us about how dreams can create a roadmap to success. As you all know, dreams can be very intuitive. And I myself, I always wonder why I can remember some and others I quickly forget. So we'll have a great discussion about that next week, and I'm really looking forward to that show. And a few dates to mark on your calendar, upcoming shows. On March the 4th, we will be bringing back my very good friend and New York Times bestselling author back on the show, Miss Kimberla Lawson Roby, and I am so excited about that upcoming show. Her new bestselling book is entitled The Best of Everything, and it is awesome. Again, Tony, I read it in less than 24 hours. Once I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. It was awesome. And then the following week, March the 11th, we'll have motivational icon himself, Mr. Zig Ziglar, along with his daughter, Julie Norman. Mr. Ziglar's an awesome gentleman. They are both very genuine, down-to-earth people, and I'm really looking forward to that show. Mr. Ziglar has a new book coming out this year, later, actually, in the October time frame, entitled A View from the Top, Embracing the Struggle. So mark those dates on your calendar, because I'm looking forward to those dates. So moving on to tonight's topic, which is a very important one, talking about teens and adult children, parenting teens and adult children. Now, I know this is something that we all need help with, and quite a few parents struggle with. So our guest this evening, Ms. Tracy Treseder, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and she'll let me know when she comes on the line here, is joining us all the way from across the world in Australia. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about 8 or 8:30, maybe 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, Thursday morning over there. I'm going to bring Tracy on the line and just verify that. Tracy, are you there?
I'm here. Yes, good morning. It's 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. on a hot, sunny day.
Wow, amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome to Living by Design.
Thank you. Very pleased to be here.
And Tony, my co-host, is with us as well.
Oh, good morning or good evening, Tony.
Well, good morning, evening to you, Tracy.
Yes. Welcome from the land down under.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just love your accent. I always think Australians have such a nice accent. Of course, I have a southern accent.
Yeah, got that one.
Yes. Tracy, I am going to just jump in here and allow you to give a little bit of background to my listeners about your experience in education and what you have been doing in your work, because your bio sounds very impressive, and I absolutely love the work that you do, because parenting teens and adults is so very different from parenting toddlers and babies and children. So I'm going to let you just go ahead and take a few minutes to talk about your work.
Okay, great. Thank you. Just to give you a little background about me, I started off as a teacher. I was an educator, and a number of years ago I completed my master's degree and I moved into lecturing at university, and I was teaching in high school and then in university, so constantly around teenage, adolescent children. And then back in the in early 2000, I moved into coaching, and I actually started in the field of executive coaching. And interestingly enough, after coaching for a year or so, I noticed that there was a very similar theme with my executives that I was coaching, and that was that things, their relationships at work were all starting to work, and things were going well with, you know, their direction and what they wanted in their work. But they kept complaining to me that their teenagers were driving them insane. And I thought, there's got to be some way that I can bring my coaching skills into the world of parenting. And not just be a parenting expert or a parent educator, but actually really bring the tools of coaching to parenting. So basically what I did was a bit of a search around the world, and I found an organization called the Academy for Family Coach Training, and I did some training with them, a year-long advanced coaching course, and that just really, for me, hit the nail on the head. It was, I'd found my mark, I'd found where I needed to be, and I found the answer to really help these people, these parents, these families who were struggling with teens who were from their point of view, not reacting or not growing or not becoming the people they really wanted them to be. And so I moved out of executive coaching and then began my own business in early 2003, and have had my coaching for teenagers business running very successfully since then. And I work pretty much with families, not families in a group, but independently, so either mum and dad together or the teenager by themselves. And we work around issues of, and it can be many and varied, anything from my kids failing at school and their grades aren't great, or they're truanting or missing out, you know, wagging school as we call it, or they're taking drugs, or I've got a very shy, introverted child, what do I do? Or my kid's about to become a teenager, help, I don't know how to parent them as a teenager. And then I occasionally have grandparents, and I have parents of older children who are still schmoozing and living at home. So I really deal with quite a wide variety of issues right across the spectrum of adolescent, teen and young adult behaviour in association with the families. And the work that we do or the work I do is based around a model we call the 7 Ways to Coach Your Teenager. And it's a model that kind of goes across all levels. It goes across your relationship with your spouse or your husband or your wife or your partner to your children, your relationship with your children or your colleagues, peers, co-workers. It's a really wonderful way to communicate and to really get the best out of everybody without trying to control them. So, yeah, it's been a great journey for me, and I've helped so many families and had such amazing results with the clients that I've worked with. And it's just wonderful to see relationships that they thought were doomed really blossom and grow into relationships that they thought they never really could have with their children. So, yeah, I love it.
Great.
I love it every day.
That's wonderful. That's really good. Yeah, because I know that's the age when they can really start to move away from you and develop their own identity, which, you know, kind of takes me into my first question. When a teen does start to pull away and develop their own identity, how can you help that transition so that they can become well-adjusted adults? Because I know that can be a very difficult transition for both the child and the parent.
Yeah, very true. And I think what the parent has to realize is that it's actually the kid is just doing their job. Their job as they grow into this next stage of development is to work out who they are and how they really fit in the world. And so what they do is they try on different kinds of behaviors to see whether that's who they are. And then they try something else and they go, well, is that who I am? And these different behaviors often scare the parent and or make them think, oh, my God, they're going to be a goth, you know, and they're going to be a goth forever. Well, or they're going to be, piercings everywhere and they're going to be like that forever, or they're going to be introverted and shy and they'll be like that forever. No, they won't. They're often just trying on these behaviors. So part of the process is for the parent to almost relax a little and not get too worried that this week they're wearing all black and dyeing their hair black and wanting to wear black eyeliner everywhere. That's okay. Ultimately, it's about recognizing the teen or the kid for the qualities that they have. You know, are they still being courageous? Are they still being compassionate? Are they do they still have a good sense of humor? Are they still caring for their little brothers and sisters or still helping out in the community? Are they still doing these things even though some of their other behavior might be slightly off? And if they are, then, you know, it's not that bad. And the more the parent tries to control them, to pull them in, it's the worse they become. Basically, if you look at it this way, get the picture of a horse, okay? You're leading a horse with a bridle and you're holding the bridle and all of a sudden you decide that you want to go left and the horse doesn't. And you're walking beside the horse and you start to pull. Now, what usually happens, you pull and the horse pulls back. And he pulls back and he pulls back and he digs his hooves in and you just can't go anywhere. And pretty much that's what happens with the teenagers. If you try to control them, they push back. There's more resistance and you just create distance in the relationship. So part of the process is about understanding that this is a stage of development that they have to go through. It's required. And then the other part is to really look for their qualities. Look for the qualities that they bring to the way they're being, who they are. Not so much what they're doing, because what they're doing is often secondary to who they're being. And that's quite important, because we get kind of waylaid with the accomplishments. You know, did they get an A in their paper or did they get 100%? Well, really, it's not so much the accomplishment. It's more about the quality that they bring to achieve that.
I like that.
Now, Tracy, I wanted to ask you this because this is one of the challenges, particularly when you're talking about generationally, because there is a generation of parents who who parented a little different than parenting philosophies and styles that are going on now.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at those differences now, you have parents that, and I think every parent has been this way, but really today you see it more times than not. I was raised by a parent who said, do what I say, not what I do. And
yeah.
And now parents have this tendency to want to be friends, but not only want to be friends, they parent in a way that they say, I've got to be overly protective. I don't want them to make the same mistakes I made. I don't want them to go through the kinds of things and the kind of hurt I went through. So sometimes they become, as you mentioned, overprotective and don't allow the growth. So what advice can you give to those parents that are sitting there and have that attitude? Because I've run into a lot of parents that are that way. That it's my job to keep my child from going through the same mess I went through.
Yeah, very true. It's almost like, you know, I experienced it and therefore I don't want them to. And what's really hard is that the best way to learn is through the lesson itself. And that's quite a hard thing for a parent to sit back and say, well, I don't want them to fail because, you know, I failed a lot when I was a kid and that was really bad and I don't want them to fail. But there are so many lessons to be learned from failing. And you know, as we say, there is no failure, there is only feedback. And so if they change their thought process around it, that it's not actually failing, it's, okay, well, something didn't work quite well, so what is the lesson that we learn here? How do we learn from it and how do we move forward? So it's about helping their kids, their teens, develop the skills to become that confident, caring, compassionate young adult that they want them to be and to become responsible and independent. And they won't gather those skills, particularly responsibility and independence, if their parents rescue them. And there's this great distinction, because in coaching we have all these distinctions. There's this great distinction that we use. It's called support versus rescue. And what we see is, yeah, it's a great one. And for a lot of parents, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I see what I'm doing now is I'm just rescuing them. And it's from, you know, it can be minor things like the kid gets to school and they've left their homework at home. They ring up and they go, Mom, can you bring my homework down? Well, no, sorry, you left it, bad luck, you know, let's talk about getting more organized when you get home. Mom, I need to get to this place now. Well, why didn't you tell me about that yesterday? Oh, well, can you drive me now? Yeah, well, yeah. Or, Mom, my phone's ran out of credit. Can you give me $10? Or, you know, and it goes on and on. So there's just this constant rescuing of parents because they don't want them to experience the things they did. And unfortunately, we know that the best way for these kids to learn is to have a little bit of this hardship and a bit of this pain and a bit of this real life experience themselves and have the parent guide them through it or coach them through it, not push them.
Right, and you know, Tracy, that is a very profound what you just said, and I absolutely agree with everything you said. What about in cases of, and I understand helping the child to learn the lesson and, you know, knowing that it will make them a more responsible and independent adult, but what about the cases of divorce where the parent themselves are having some issues with their guilt or the fact that they did divorce, and because the child was raised in a single-parent home and maybe the one parent wasn't there enough when they were growing up. So as the child starts to become an adult, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, and then the child makes the parent feel guilty because they weren't there. So while the parent is doing all the right things and trying to help the child to become more independent and withholding those impulses to rescue them, but the child holds that guilt over the parent's head. Well, you know, you owe me.
Yeah, good question. And it happens a lot with divorced families.
Exactly.
And, yeah, so my first tip here would be that it's really about the parent getting over the issue of guilt. And the only person who can make you feel guilty is you. As much as the kids try it on, it's ultimately you, your thought process, that brings on that feeling of guilt. you can make a decision in your head that I did the, you know, looking at the past, which you can't change, I did the best with what I had at the time, and that was the way I thought it was best to be done, and I can't change that. So rather than live in the past with the guilt, let's think about how we can do it better going forward, because there's absolutely nothing that can be done about what happened. We know that. So it's really about the parent getting past that, they're making me feel guilty. So one of the things when I'm coaching people is we talk about control and who controls whom. Well, the only person you can control is yourself. The only person that makes you feel guilty is you. And it's a bit of a, you know, profound statement to make, but and it does take a bit of work to work through all this control theory issue or you know, principle. But once people get it, they really understand that I did the best I could at the time. And you know, I'm really sorry that's how you feel right now, but there's no point dwelling in the past. How do you want it to be? Let's work on going forward.
And then
I would simply set outcomes or goals for, so how do you want your relationship to be with your adult child now? Because we know that you messed up in the past, and hey, that's unfortunate, and that's the way things go, and you can apologize as much as you like, and you can, you know, be sorry, but let's be clear that you cannot change anything that happened back then. And it doesn't matter how guilty you feel, it won't make it any better going forward.
Right. So along that same realm, practicing tough love, the only way to practice tough love and not feel the guilt is to deal with the guilt before you move forward with explaining to the child, you know, I'm doing this for your own good. I'm trying to help you become a more independent, responsible adult. And I love you, and I'm doing this because I love you. And
yeah,
necessary
yeah,
to explain that to the child.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The tough love one sometimes can, you know, can turn a bit the wrong way in that, you know, as the parent raises their hand to smack the kid, I'm doing this for your own good, you know, not in that instance at all. You know, we know that punishment doesn't work. We know that bribing doesn't work, and they're all sort of control issues. So from a tough love perspective, it's, you know, I look at this example. I had a client whose teenager kept slamming their bedroom door, constantly slam, and I said, well, just take the door off. Then they can't slam the door. You know, and if they break things in their room or if they mess things up in their room, we'll take them out, remove them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see as tough love. Not so much I'm doing this just because, you know, I want you to be responsible. It's really about helping them understand the consequences of their actions. So if you choose the behavior, you choose the consequence.
Okay, and actually, when I said tough love, I wasn't necessarily, because I am going to get to that anger issue in a second here, but when I say tough love, I'm referring to, let's say that the child is an adult, over 21, but they are still living at home with you, the parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have every means of getting a job and being independent, but they're not doing it. And when I say tough love, I'm referring to giving them a time frame. This is your time frame. You must be independent and have a job and be able to take care of yourself in this time frame, or otherwise you need to find somewhere else to stay. That's what I'm referring to as tough love.
Yeah, now that's a really good example that you give, because what often happens is the parent will make the threat. If you don't get the job by the end of the month, you know, you'll be out and blah, blah, blah. And the, you know, the adult child's going, yeah, 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 blah, blah, blah. And then what happens is the end of the month comes, and the adult child hasn't got the job, and what happens? Nothing. The parent just complains more. I told you, you should get a job, and you should do this. And, you know, meanwhile, the adult child's either moved to another room, put their iPod, you know, headphones on, and is completely ignoring them. So we've got to go back one step, and go back to the step of support versus rescue. So obviously this parent has been rescuing this adult child since they were a kid, and this person doesn't know how to be responsible for themselves. So how do we create that responsibility? Well, one of the ways is to do it from an adult perspective of, we would make an agreement. So I would say, Kathy, I'd like to make an agreement with you that by the end of the month that you actually have a job, and we'll leave it at that for the moment, and, you know, you've got 2 or 3 weeks to go and find yourself a job. Okay, no worries. Is that okay? Do you agree with that? We want a job that's working 20, 30 hours, you know. So you kind of clarify what the bottom line is in the job, but you make the agreement, and I'd say to you, Kathy, can you just confirm back what we're agreeing on here? And you'd tell me. And then we go, okay, fine. So we let the end of the month come, and bingo, theoretically, you'll have the job. And then I'd say, okay, so now you've got the job. Now let's see, you know, let's sit down, let's create a budget, let's work out what you can actually do in regards to getting yourself set up to move out of home, because, you know, it's a big step and you need to be responsible. And so let's make an agreement about moving out. And what are the things you need to do to move out? How can I support you around that? But I'm not going to rescue you. I'm not going to give you money. I'm not going to, you know, I'll help you load the car and drive you there, but I'm not going to pay your bond. I'm not going to pay your rent and blah, blah, blah. So make an agreement. Put a time frame on it. And then if they don't meet the agreement, you then get to that point where they haven't made the agreement and you say, look, we had an agreement. You know, you're adults talking here. We had an agreement. What got in the way of you keeping it? So what do you think, now that you haven't kept it, what should be the consequence? And then you sit down and you basically discuss what will be the consequence, the logical consequence, the natural consequence of not finding your own place. Well, in my mind, that would be you've got to move. You've got to go and sleep on a friend's couch.
Right.
And then I'd help them move out, change the locks, off you go.
Now, what about, you mentioned, because I said I wanted to come back to the anger situation, how do you handle teen and or adult children anger situations if the child seems to have a problem with anger?
Yeah. A couple of ways to do it. It depends on whether the anger is, whether it's a verbal or physical anger, whether they're verbally abusing you.
Verbal for now.
Okay, so if it's verbal for now. Ideally, what you would do as a parent is that you would just simply state in a very calm voice, the way you are speaking to me now is not appropriate and I will not tolerate that, and walk away. Simply walk away. Don't engage in it at all. And then when they've calmed down, because what happens is when people get angry, they produce adrenaline and then they produce cortisol, and the cortisol just kind of reacts with their brain in a way that makes them say and do things that they wish they'd never said and done. So there's no point talking to, trying to have a lucid, sensible conversation with somebody who's really angry, because they say and do things they always regret. So at that point, the parent has to say very clearly, this is not appropriate. I do not like the way you are speaking to me. I am going. I'm leaving. We'll talk about it later. And then come back when they're calm. And you just keep doing that so you don't confront, you don't buy into the argument.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to speak to somebody who's drunk. You know, have you ever tried to have an argument
exactly.
with somebody who's drunk? There's no point. There's
That's
absolutely
right.
no point. Same thing. And then you come back to them when they're calm. And then you can address the anger issue and say, you know, I really think there's, you know, you kind of fly off the handle fairly quickly. Is this something that you want to get some help on? You know, do we need to talk about this? Do you need to get some therapy, or do you need to see somebody? You know, it's not. And when the person is calm, you can talk more rationally about it.
True.
I wanted to ask. There are a lot of parents out there that are listening, and you're giving some wonderful advice. One of the challenges with a lot of parents is that. They have a tendency to take some of the same dysfunctional parenting habits that their parents did and just pass it on. How can they supersede or circumvent that handed-down process of dysfunctional parenting? How can they stop it? What do they need to do to realize, okay, I didn't like this, but I'm finding myself doing the same thing that my parents did to me, and I know it didn't work because of the way I reacted to them?
Yeah,
great question, yeah.
Yeah, good question. And it's something that I deal with regularly with my clients. You know, they put their head in their hands and they go, oh, I just sound like my mother, you know, and they shake their head and you go, yeah, you do. So part of the process here is really about self-observation, observing themselves, catching themselves in the act of doing the behavior that they really don't like. and then making a conscious choice to change it. And it's a process that happens slowly. Any kind of behavior change doesn't, you don't just wake up one morning and go, wow, I'm going to be a great parent. You wake up the next morning and you say to yourself, now, who am I choosing to be as a parent today? You know, today I'm choosing to be a calm, relaxed, and confident parent. Great. Okay. So if throughout the day something comes up and flares up and automatically you jump into your mother or your father, you catch yourself in the act, even mid-sentence, as I say to my clients. You could be halfway through a sentence and your voice in your head says, you sound just like your mother. That's, you stop. Stop halfway and then breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And breathe. And I really recommend that you take two or three really deep breaths and then make a conscious choice about how you want to change your behavior going forward. Who do you want to be? And if you've flown off the handle and you can hear yourself being your mother, you stop mid-sentence and go, okay, I've chosen to be calm and confident today. Okay, stop mid-sentence, take a couple of breaths. Okay, how am I going to approach this now? How do I be calm and confident and deal with this issue? And I tell you, you have a completely different outcome, completely. It takes practice. Doesn't happen overnight.
How do you do that in the midst? I mean, and I understand what you're saying, but you do stop the action. You take the breaths and you do that. But you're in the midst of having this thing going on with your child. Do you then at that particular time not only say to yourself, do you let the child know, you know what, I'm not going to treat you the way I was treated? Do you educate them on that, or do you just go on with it unconsciously and move forward?
There's no point in dragging up the past. You're actually better to just simply take the breath and breathe, take the pause, breathe, say to your child, hang on, I want to handle this differently.
Okay.
Just give me a moment. I'm going to handle this differently. Let's try this. And then the kid starts to realize that, hey, you're starting to do things differently. And when you start to do things differently, you're not trying to control them anymore. You're trying to be there, be the parent as coach. Be there for them, with them, but not push them, not rescue them, not push them or control them. And they start to see the difference. And when you start to be different, you have a cascading effect onto their behavior. They start to change as a result of you being different. It's really quite remarkable how it happens. It's like dropping the pebble in the pond. You know, you're the pebble. You drop in the pond, you drop in these new behaviors, and then there's this lovely ripple effect outward. It really starts to affect all the people around you. It's quite extraordinary. And it's not through coercion or control or nagging, criticizing, blaming, threatening, punishing, shaming, any of those control kind of issues, what we call the deadly habits of external control. It's none of those. It's through respecting and listening and understanding and appreciating and supporting and helping them become responsible and the wonderful independent young adults that they really want to be.
So, Tracy, when your teen or your 16, 17-year-old, when they're still teens, but they really think they're grown by that point, when they act like, and I've had quite a bit of experience this in my situation, when they act like they know more than you and you don't know what you're talking about and you're old, you're from the old school, and that's how they did it back in your day, back in the olden days, and they just absolutely do not want to listen to you. How can you communicate with them effectively without losing my cool or without the parent losing their cool and get the point across?
Yeah. Well, a word came up there that's a really, really vitally important one, and that is listen. And teens don't feel that we listen to them. You know, when we ask teenagers, what is it that you want from the adults around you? The first thing they say is respect, and the second thing they say is I really want them to listen to me. So what we find is what I find is getting my parents to listen. Listen from their point of view. Don't tell them your story of what you did 50 years ago. They don't care. And don't interrupt them, and don't try and fix and solve their problems, and don't tell them how they should be doing it. Ask them instead. Ask them questions. And not questions from an interrogation point of view, but curious questions. And when you ask them and don't tell them, they feel respected. They feel heard. They really feel that you understand them. And that's probably one of the key pieces in all of this, is that we as adults, particularly in, you know, this busy lifestyle that we have and with so many things going on, everything's like, you know, it's like a rapid fire. Boom, 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 boom. You know, let's go. We do this and that and that and that. And then it's like you're firing instructions constantly at them. And they don't hear half the time. And the reason they don't hear is because we don't listen. So parents really need to change the way that they listen. They've got to step into their shoes. Try and visualize it and feel what it's like to be them. You know, the classic, here's a really good example. You know, the daughter comes home from school. She's 13 or 14. She's in what we would call year 9. And it's a fairly horrible year. Kids are, you know, pretty nasty in year 9. She comes home and she says, "Oh, Mum, you know, Susie was really mean to me today. You know, she said this and she did that and, you know, and it was just awful." And quite often what the parent would immediately do is jump into fixing and solving. And they'd say, "Oh, well, you know, look, that was really mean of her. That was nasty. She shouldn't have done that. And I think you should do this, this, and this, and I'm going to speak to the teacher, and I want you to do this, and blah, 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 blah." And meanwhile, the kid is like, "Oh, well, hang on a sec." So really, if you turn that around and say, "Oh, that must be awful. You must feel terrible. Tell me more." Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you think you could do? What how do you want to go forward with this?
Love that. Love it.
And it makes and then the kid feels heard. They feel respected. They feel that you're not just there to solve their problems, fix it for them, but you're going to help them. You're going to work with them to help them solve the problem. Not solve.
And it gives them an opportunity to think about how they would handle the problem.
It's empowering.
Solving it for them. Yes, it's very empowering.
Absolutely. It's empowering for them. And that's part of the problem, is that there's this power struggle between teens and parents. You know, it's almost like the parent has to have the power over. We don't want to have power over. We want to have power with. You know, we want to have this win-win situation. We don't want to be having power over them, because then there's always a winner and a loser. And
right.
we don't want them to feel like losers.
Now, here's a question I have, Trey. I fit in the category. I have a child that's in the ninth year, as you said.
Yes.
And she's 14 years old, about to be 15, freshman in high school, and her mom and I aren't together, so I get an opportunity to have what I like to call a daddy-daughter time, and we spend time together and have conversations, and with the technology, we text each other and email and that kind of thing. My challenge sometimes, though, is her mom will say something to her, and she'll talk back to her mother. And when she talks back to her mother, it's as though it's a disrespectful way. Her mother will say something, and it's like, okay, this is a negotiation instead of, "This is what I need for you to do. It's not a negotiation. These are the actions I need for you to take." She has something to say. Whereas when she and I are together, it's understood that we can communicate, and we communicate very well. The only challenge is if we're having a conversation and I've made a statement, how do I get away from making her feel as though, okay, Dad said do this, and that's it? Because I don't want her to feel uncomfortable. I want her to understand that it's for her own good, but I want it to matter what I'm saying. And I guess, for lack of a better term, I'm trying not to be a bully, but I don't necessarily want a lot of back talk in it, because the bottom line is, I mean, I'm listening to what you're saying and I am hearing it, but you've started giving me excuses for why you're acting the way that you are. How do you deal with those kinds of situations?
It's part of that issue of respect, and you use that word respect. Teens don't feel respected, and often parents feel that they should just automatically be respected by their teenager, because I'm the parent and you're the child, and therefore you should just respect me. And you know, respect isn't necessarily earned. It's, you're born worthy of respect. And one thing that we do as adults is we tend to disrespect our children almost unconsciously. We just throwaway lines at them, and we just bark orders at them, and we do all these things at them, and not realizing that everything that we're doing, really, if one of our friends did that to us, we would feel that we were being disrespected. So part of the process here is for the parent to change the way they do things, in that showing more respect for their teenager by looking for their qualities, not their accomplishments, telling them they respect their sense of humor or their courage or whatever, and then watching the teen change and become more respectful as a result of the parent being more respectful. You can't force a person to be respectful. I mean, you know, briefly, only momentarily possibly, but ultimately in the long term, you can't force the respect. So really it goes back to you changing the words that you use with her, your language, so you have more of a coaching language, and you talk to her more about her qualities and what you respect in her. You listen to her from a different way so she feels that she's understood, and then she will start to behave differently with you, and she will be more respectful as a result.
Yeah, and we do that quite a bit. Kathy, if I can just get this one piece in too.
No, go ahead. No problem.
Because the one thing that is kind of a caveat and associated with this, you hear a lot of parents say this, and I came from a parent that was kind of this way. You hear a lot of parents say, my job is to be your parent, not your friend. How do you combat that? Because there are so many people who have the attitude that, and it's not even an iron-fisted attitude, it's that I'm the grown-up, you're the child, and I know more than you, and I know better for you. How do you combat that attitude? How do we, as parents, combat that attitude within ourselves? Because a lot of parents feel that way. I'm not your friend. I'm your parent. That's my responsibility.
Well, but that is true. You are their parent, and you can also be friendly. But a friend, if you look at teenagers, a friend wouldn't necessarily tell you not to take part in that risky behavior, or not take those drugs, or not steal from that shop. A friend may not necessarily tell you to do that. A friend might even go along with you, whereas a parent would. A parent would say, that behavior really is not appropriate. You know, we need to have some boundaries here, some guidelines. So it is important, and I think the distinction is clear. You are their parent. You can be friendly with them. And I like to use the three Fs, firm, friendly, and fair. And you can be friendly, but the bottom line is you are their parent, and you do have the wise adult, fully developed brain on your sitting on your shoulders, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So when push comes to shove, when I say this, when safety is an issue, choice is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you can give them choice, but if safety is really the ultimate, the underlying issue, the concern, then there is no choice. So, yes, you do need to be firm. You do need to have boundaries, not to the point where those boundaries are so absolutely restrictive the kid all they want to do is break out of the boundaries. But you put the boundaries in place with consultation and negotiation with the teenager. You know, like curfews, for example. They might say, I want to be out till 2:30, and you say, well, that's ridiculous. I want you home at 11. And then they say, well, that's too early, you know. Well, okay, let's agree on 12:30 or 12 o'clock. Midnight, you've got to be home by midnight. Okay, let's agree on that. And so, and then if that teenager then shows that they can constantly meet the agreement of being home at midnight, then maybe we can push it out to 12:30, maybe even 1 o'clock, depending on, you know, what's going on. So it's really about them knowing that if they show the responsibility, and they then they're going to be able to have the boundaries extended a little. And as they keep showing the responsibility, the boundary keeps going. And ultimately, we want them to make good choices while we're not around to guide them. That's ultimately what we want.
And I just want to jump in. I really like what you said, Tony, and I had made a note here because I wanted to just do a little quick exercise here and use your scenario, Tony, because I have to 150% agree with you in what you said about the non-negotiables and the backtalk when you're trying to explain to your child this is what you should do and this is a non-negotiable. So, Tracy, the way you explained it, if let's just say in Tony's scenario, if his teenager talks back to her mother in a very disrespectful way, and she says whatever she says. Her mother has given her an instruction of something to do, and then she backtalks her.
Mm-hmm.
If her mother was to say something like, why do you feel the need to speak to me that way, and why do you think you should or shouldn't have to do X, whatever it is that the mother has asked her to do? Why do you think that you shouldn't have to do that, or why do you think that you should do whatever the mother has asked her to do? And say it in a, you know, in a tone of voice where you are being respectful of her and the mother's not screaming it at her, but, you know, she's asking her in a very reasonable manner, okay, you tell me, why do you feel that you shouldn't have to do that? Is that what you're referring to?
No. First of all, why questions should be left on the shelf. Why questions are quite judgmental. If you said to a teenager, why did you do that? Immediately, you put them on the defensive. They feel they have to defend their position. So why questions are out. What and how? And don't disguise the what as a why, really. So it's really, if a teenager was back-chatting, I would simply make a statement. I do not appreciate the way that you are speaking to me right now.
Okay.
And when we're calm, we'll talk about it. And then I would have a family meeting. And the family meetings are really important. You get together as a family, you talk about the values of the family. What do you value? What do you believe in?
I like that.
And as a family, or as a community, or as a group, or as a church, or however you, you know, wherever your values lie, if you believe that speaking back to people is not appropriate, is disrespectful, then let's agree not to do that. So you've got to talk about what the values are first, rather than just throw it in her face and say, why are you doing that? Because she'll just say, because you're annoying me, you know, get off my back. You know, she'll just come out with anything off the top of her head. Because they don't like being, yeah. So a lot of it comes back to the control thing. Teenagers don't like to be controlled. And ultimately, we can't control them. You know, the only way you can really control a teenager is to handcuff them to the bedpost so that they're in your sight all the time. You can't control another person. You can only control the strength of the relationship. And that's a really, really vital point. So it's up to you to control the strength of the relationship. If the relationship is really good, then the teenager will not say or do those things because they value the relationship.
And so let's talk about some of the major issues that parents have to deal with. I mean, everything we've talked about to this point is, you know, respecting the child and, you know, understanding how to negotiate in a respectful manner and, you know, where the respect goes both ways. But what if you do have a child that is just totally out of control and doing some things that are unacceptable, like failing in school, or you have seen evidence that they're smoking cigarettes or taking drugs, or, you know, they're just really not, or they're wrong crowd association. You know that they're hanging out with the wrong crowd. What about situations like that where they're just really severe? How do you negotiate properly or show respect? How do you handle those situations?
Yeah, let's start with the wrong crowd. That's an interesting one. The more you try and tell your teenager that they're hanging with the wrong people, the more they want to be with them. So the teenagers, you know, there are so many influences in your teenager's life, and
right.
It's really important that you be the best influence. And as they become older teenagers and young adults, they take so much more credence and influence from their peers. And so to try to have an influence over them is really, once again, comes back to that strength of the relationship. So you cannot tell them. There's no point in telling them you must not hang with those people. They're really bad. You can talk generally about, I don't agree with their values or their beliefs. I don't agree with the things that they're doing, and I think it's irresponsible. And it's your choice if you want to stay with them. I'm just letting you know that I don't agree with it. I mean, you know, there are some severe options of moving home, you know, moving states, moving countries even, to get away from bad groups. And sometimes the kids get to a point where after a while, particularly if the parent is not pushing them to move on from that group, if the parent is being respectful and listening and appreciating and, you know, helping them to develop their own value set often what happens is the teenager says after a while, you know, I really want to get out of this group, but I don't know how to do it. Can you help me? And I've had kids say that. And then basically it's okay. Well, let's look at another school. Let's move schools. And often that's a good way to do it. So it's really about not telling them they can't be with those people, because those people provide them support and comfort. They do things together that they enjoy, even though they may be illegal or inappropriate. And they're getting the comfort from them because they're not getting it from home.
Interesting.
Yeah. What was the other one? Failing in school. Okay. So
and I just mentioned failing in school. I mean, if you see evidence of them being on drugs or smoking cigarettes or, you know, things that are just totally not acceptable.
The drug issue is quite a different one, because if you suspect that your teenager is taking drugs, usually the first indicators are their behavior changes. They become withdrawn. They tend to start lying a lot. You know, things might disappear, money out of your wallet, small items of things. If you're suspecting that they're on drugs, there comes a point where you can't necessarily talk rationally to the teenager about it, because you're often just talking to the drug. So if they're smoking dope every day, you know, it's in their system and you're not talking rationally to them, that's when you need to get outside help. So you really need to speak to a drug counsellor or speak to the school to have some kind of intervention, because it becomes, particularly if they're taking it every day, it becomes an issue that is beyond our realm of understanding and responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to failing in school, one of the things that I find works quite well is asking the kid what they want to do. What do you want to do when you leave school? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to be? What sort of things do you look at doing? And then, you know, and they might say a few different jobs, and you go, okay, so do you know anybody that's left school at 14 or 15? At 15? Yeah, what are they doing now? Well, they're working in the local drugstore for $5 an hour, you know. Okay, so what about the kids who've finished school? What kind of opportunities do they have? So rather than tell them, we've got to get away from this telling, because when you tell, it's like the shutters come down. They just stick their fingers in their ears and go, nah, 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 not listening.
Right.
So you got to ask them. Start asking the questions.
Or in the case of failing at school, possibly offer them, do you feel like you need tutoring, or, you know, make those type of suggestions maybe?
Yeah, or, you know, what is getting in the way of you achieving at school?
Right.
You know, there could be a million reasons. They might be really badly bullied at school.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they might be in a number of classes where they really dislike the teachers, or the teachers dislike them, or whatever. You know, there's a number of reasons. They might be scared of achieving. They might be terrified of failing, but they are. So, you know, there's a whole lot of issues as to why they might be. But it simply comes back to asking rather than telling. You know, I'm going to get you a tutor. You're not doing well in math, so I'm going to get you a tutor. And it's like, just another thing. So, and if you ask them, what do you know of anybody who's left school early? What are they doing now? How are they doing the job they really want to be doing? Are they successful?
Right.
And then that makes them feel that you're listening and you're hearing them. And then it would be just about setting some outcomes. So, you know, your grades are low. You know, you're getting D's and E's. So let's look at maybe moving a D to a C next term and see how we go there. How can you do that? So just setting little small goals for them and letting them set the goals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, because I know we're getting close, so I just wanted to get this question in. From the standpoint of the parenting aspect, if there was maybe a couple of things that parents that are consistent in parenting that maybe is a good sign that parents are on the right track, or that they need to change something within their behavior, what would be one of those things that the parents could look for within themselves?
I didn't quite get the question.
How does it, I guess the easiest way of saying it, if there's something that a parent can do to recognize that one thing? Is there a technique that they can look at to change that behavior so they can start becoming a better parent for their children?
Oh,
because a lot of parents have ways of looking at things that are different, and how to make those changes start to happen.
Yeah, well, the first part of it is to observe themselves non-judgmentally. You know, take a step back two or three times through the day during your parenting times, and ask yourself, you know, was this effective? Was I working as a good kind of parent as coach? Was I doing it well? Not, oh God, I'm such a bad parent. I'm hopeless. You know, I need help. But really, just looking at it non-judgmentally, observing your behavior. And then asking yourself, okay, what do I need to do differently to improve this relationship? How do I need to be? Not how can I fix and change my kid? Because you can't fix and change your kid. You can only work on yourself. And the very first piece of the puzzle is the self-observation. And then when they get there, once the self-observation is starting to take place, then they can start apply the different methodologies.
And Tracy, we're coming up on our last 4 minutes. I knew this hour was going to go very quickly because this is a wonderful discussion. What advice do you have for single parents of teens and adult children? Because I know single parents really struggle quite a bit when they don't have that assistance. So what advice can you give them really quickly in the next couple of minutes?
I think the best thing for them to do is to work on the strength of the relationship. Don't try to control, but also to try to bring in a support network of people who are the opposite sex to them. So if it's a single mother and they've got sons, then the boys need to have some good male role models. And so they need to be involved in things where there are good male role models. It might be an uncle, or it could be a scout leader, or it could be a youth group leader or whatever. And the same thing if it's a single father in sole custody of the children, he needs to find good support network of women who can bring that female orientation, that female peace into the relationship. That's really quite important. The other thing too is for them to look after themselves, because one of the things that's most missed in a single parent relationship is the parent often doesn't have time to care for themselves because they're so busy caring solely for the kid, they're being mum and dad together, that they don't have time out for themselves to, you know, go to a movie or have a massage or take a walk, or they're so busy. And really, to be the best parent, you need to look after your own needs first, and then you can be the best parent.
That's excellent advice. Tony, do you have any close-out questions for our guests before we close?
Well, probably the biggest thing is just how can any of our listeners get in touch with you or get more information?
Absolutely.
From you?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. You can email me, Tracy, Tracy, at coaching, Coaching, four, teenagers, with an S. teenagers.com.au. So Tracy at coaching4teenagers.com.au. Or you can go onto my website, which is the same thing, and you can have a look through there. I'm actually just about to launch a new one in the next few days, so it'll change, but that'll be good. I'm happy to take calls. I coach people from all over the world, and I run group workshops for parents and coach parents and or teenagers from all over the world. So, it's possible. We do a lot of it by phone. So it's quite interactive and incredibly, unbelievably fulfilling and life-changing.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Tracy, we're coming down on our last 60 seconds, and I want to thank you ever so kindly for joining us this evening. You have been a wealth of knowledge. And for anyone that didn't get Tracy's information, please go to my website, and I will have information about Tracy and how you can get in touch with her. And, again, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we are going to sign off for now. I am Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you next week on Living by Design. Good night, everyone.